Blog Talk Radio.
No man's a jester playing Shakespeare round your throne room floor, while the juggler's act is danced upon the crown that you once wore.
To break on through, I am Pam Ray. With me, as always, my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the website or the group to call in to listen, to share, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, tonight is an after midnight show, which means that while we do not allow for smut or porn or overly graphic violence, we do allow for a bit more adult language and content. If that's not your cup of tea, you can check out our other shows. We have up to 2 shows per night, both on earlier hours and after midnight hours, with a variety of styles of topics and types of poetry, something for everybody's taste. Also, be sure when you get a chance to go to Amazon and check out the poetry anthologies that Late Night Poets has on sale, because when you purchase them, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. Now, it's probably difficult to tell from the intro song, which was different from our usual intro song, but tonight's topic is poetry inspired by the influence of Shakespeare. Because April 23rd happens to be William Shakespeare's birthday, and so Rex and I ran a contest where we had as prompts a variety of both songs and artwork that have been inspired by various plays by Shakespeare. That song, The King is Dead by Elton John, is actually about a man who falls from power, which was a common theme of many of Shakespeare's plays, including Julius Caesar and Hamlet. And with that being said, I have to say I'm looking forward to tonight, and I'd like to say hello, Rex. How's it going?
Hello. What's up?
Oh, just looking forward to an awesome night of poetry, hanging out with you and other cool poets. What's up with you?
Nothing.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, what's that?
Nothing yet.
Well, that's true. That's true. Pretty soon, though, the action will get started. Are you a fan of Shakespeare? I mean, do you like his work?
Yep.
Yeah. Me too.
The sort of complexity and the derision and the fun he had, because he rightly made fun of the hierarchy without actually pushing it in their faces per se, but did it on a level that could be enjoyed by everybody.
Yes, exactly. And I'd like to go ahead and I'd like to welcome Afaziana to the show. Welcome, Afaziana. Glad you could join us.
Thanks, Pam.
But yeah, the thing is, didn't mean to start talking, but but I wanted to go within the way that Shakespeare influenced other artists, like generations later. I mean, you know, like one of the songs we had was Limelight by Rush. We had some beautiful artwork, one by William Blake and some other famous artists. And but you're right, Rex. He had this way, like, people take a lot of his work seriously because, you know, he does, which they should, because he has some serious stuff, like dramas and sonnets that were about love. But he also did use humor in a very, to give it to the upper crust, but in a subtle way. So. And how about you, Afaziana?
Yeah, I love that about him. One of my favorite characters was Tranio in The Taming of the Shrew. And I remember writing an essay about him in high school, and it was like Tranio's True Worth. And it was about how the lower class are actually the ones who actually, like, do everything of meaning in a lot of Shakespeare's plays. And they're the ones who are secretly more intelligent, or maybe not so secretly, but, like, they're the puppet masters behind the masters. And I really loved that. Perhaps as, like, a lower-class person myself, I was like, ha!
Right?
I really enjoyed that, and I love so many Shakespearean adaptations, and they're still happening. I mean, like, 10 Things I Hate About You is one of my favorite movies, the Heath Ledger one,
yes.
Which that's aging me because I'm calling that recent, and that's like 20 years ago. but I love
well, that's
that.
Recent
and
to me.
There are still constantly teen books made that are based on Shakespeare. I think Once Every Never is like 2 years ago, and that's based on Midsummer's Night's Dream, I believe. There's Shakespeare manga, which is actually like a really good way to teach Shakespeare because it's it was meant to be plays, right? It was meant to be action, and to have it in like comic book form lets them see the action, not just hear the words. And I think it works really nicely. So I'm kind of a geek for all the adaptations of Shakespeare.
Awesome. Oh, I tell you, one of the best soundtracks ever was the one to Romeo and Juliet starring Leonardo DiCaprio. Do you remember that one back in the early 90s? It had the song Number One.
I do.
Bridge. Yes. I love that soundtrack. But we have plenty of rights tonight, so I better go ahead and move us forward. Our first four poems are actually carryovers from Poetess Luna's last Myths and Legends show. So we'll go ahead and put up the legend of the Brow of the Blue Depths by Marriott Dark. And Rex, would you give that a read for us, please?
The Legend of the Brow of the Blue Depths by Marriott Dark. It was we who possessed the might of the Enherjar, blessed of Valkyrie who rode the Blue Depths and our oaken long ships of power. We who coursed the mighty heights and troughs of the seas Njord that laughed at the shores of the ancient Jotun. We who fought the wars of chaos above Yggdrasil, between God and mortal, yet even we, whose strength and courage knew no equal, could not match the guile and enchantments of fabled Bibrau. She who sat in the blue, blue depths in her watery lair of magic, she who would ride the mighty sea serpent Jormungandr, enticing us with her salty gifts of promise and eternal damnation to the icy lower depths of the Niflheim. The Brow of the Blue Water Kingdom and Temptress of Water and Ice, who was written of in ancient runes by druids of old and in our dreams, tempt us still. And pump.
That was an excellent read, Rex. All right, Aphasiana, Viking warrior that you are, step forward and make a comment. Did she drop already or did...
No, I'm just on mute. I'm sorry. Mutating. Yeah.
The Viking warriors on mute.
You know, I had to take off my helmet.
There you go.
They actually didn't cover their face very much, so that wouldn't be an excuse. But yeah, I love this. Valkyries are amazing. I love the mention of, I can never say it properly, Yggdrasil, the Tree of Life, and when there's the War of Chaos above that, it's the fight of the gods, and there's so much that depends on that tree. And yet even we, whose strength and courage knew no equal, could not match the guile and enchantment. It has, like, good language choices for this, I was going to say setting. It's not quite setting, but, like, I guess setting in time or the choosing this particular mythology. And to talk about, like, the ice of Niflheim is smart. And, I really like it. It's connected to a world that interests me.
Yeah, I kind of figured you'd like it. And I have to agree, wonderful word choices here. And Rex, your thoughts.
Well, considering there is no real background on Viv Brow itself outside of the runic stick with her name and maybe a riddle on it or some kind of religious sentiment bound within it, I like the story he wrote with this. So it gives a bit more context and offers up the possibility since there's nothing else in the Viking lore that even comes across with Viv Brow. So I like the thought that he actually conjured up his own imagery and made her that sort of the siren of the sea.
Yeah, I have to agree that you're right. Despite the fact that there's not a lot of information on that, that he did a great job conjuring up images and making a story. And I thought he had for not a particularly long piece. He had a lot of wonderful attention to detail. I really like the Viking, the Norse mythology, because a lot of times the women are just as much warriors as the men. And I don't know, there's just something really badass about it. But I like here that it talks about, like, well-known places like the Valkyrie, and it has that kind of spiritual sense to it. It wraps up with, it was written of in ancient ruins by Druids of old, and in our dreams tempt us still. I like the way it comes forth into modern times with just that one simple ending line. So beautifully written and very well done. And let me see. What am I going to do next? My thing was, I knew what poem I want to have read in Rex's voice next. So I have to decide between the other two which one I want to read in Faziana's voice. And so I hadn't quite made up my mind yet, but now I have.
Did you post it? I don't see it yet.
Not yet. I'm getting there slowly but surely. More slowly than surely.
That's all right. I was just making sure I wasn't the one who was frozen. Have you been waiting for me to do it?
Trouble of Mischief by Mother Nature.
And is this one you want me to do?
Oh, yes, please. Sorry about that.
Okay. Trouble of Mischief by Mother Nature. Taste the flavor of trouble. Trickle teasingly down your attentive tuft, stinging ever so slightly, so softly, showing special illusionary slumber. Hear the horrid whimpers of mischief, harass the heads and hairs of maidens, pulling pretty skirts and priceless pearls, pestering every possible pigment. Dark entities devouring drifting souls, draining their delicious delight slowly, laughing loudly at your lame attempts of luscious freedom. Feel the fragrance of foul fruit forcefully fill your fluttering airway. Watch eyes water with pride, wither and bloom watchful water. Toothy smile threatens your timid toes that shivers through tight shoes. See their eyes sprout speckles of sour mangoes, screaming with scorned mouths, howling hopelessly in wrongful happiness, harnessing disdain and harboring frustration, peeling pampered pale skin, pulling with pleasure of pain, dare their victim to die dreadfully, dripping in their darkened sorrows, leaping in loving lavender, licking luring ruby beads, leaking from fresh wounds. Flourish like frightened flower thorns, feeble flesh slowly making fish fillets, whimper in strength, wondrous maiden, win the war of wishful mischief, and let wondrous weathers befall you.
Great read of Aviana. And Rex, your thoughts?
All right. It sounds like a mischievous ghost mixed with a goulet, kind of something that tease and drive one to the brink of delight or any other of a number of endeavors that would push somebody over them, peeling pampered pale skin, pulling with pleasure of pain, the other victim to die dreadfully, dripping in the dark and sorrow. I like the sort in flourish like frightened flower thorns, feeble flesh slowly making fish fillets. That very much sounds like a goulet. Yeah, I'll trip a few of the goodies for me. I'll eat them fresh right off the bone. And you got to hear the hard whimpers of mischief, harass the heads and hairs of maidens. That sounds like a schoolboy in class dipping pigtails in inkwell.
It does kind of have that feel to it. Yeah, and I like those parts that you called out. This was actually written to an illustration by Arthur Rackham that was titled Mischief, and it was a picture of a young girl who had her hair tangled up in some tree branches, and some like goblin-type creatures dancing around her. It was really an interesting, yeah. But yeah, it does have that like you mentioned, that kind of that feel of something's causing a bit of trouble. And the Faziana, your thoughts?
I like it. It reminds me a little bit of those Icelandic trolls that they have in Stan of Santa, where they all have a different kind of mischief and they go around and cause trouble. it just has that kind of like sneakiness, but like not in a like, I guess it is kind of violent at some parts, but it's still like it's a lighthearted sneakiness, even when there's a bit of scariness here, and you know there are victims and there's blood and whatnot. It's still in a whimsical, kind of intriguing way. Like I didn't find it off-putting whatsoever. I found it like a joy to read. So I don't know, maybe I'm just twisted, but I found this to be like fun, not particularly scary, even though it does have some darkness to it. It had some really fun language, and the way that it used the alliteration, and it's just like forcefully fill your fluttering airway. There's something kind of magical about it that I really enjoyed.
Absolutely.
It's a fractured fairy tale.
There you go, Rex. Yeah, that's well said there. You're right. I think also part of what makes it lighthearted is the alliteration. It really adds that kind of touch of whimsy, even though a lot of the words and language are and imagery are dark, and comes across almost like as a tale of caution. There's so much kind of almost like between the alliteration and certain words like fluttering, you know, or even see their eyes sprout speckles of sour mangoes screaming with scorned mouths. I thought that was just a really clever line. You know, you could just picture this speckled mangoes like lumps. So, excellent write and very well done. Yeah, I remember when you did that those Icelandic trolls for your Christmas week show.
Yeah. My mom made me some of them. I only have three, but she made me dolls of them.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's cute. And up next we have Following Magic Pipe Music by Greg Milhorn. And it goes like this: Death from the Black Plague, was breathtakingly real as folks die. They pray, God, hear our appeal. Overrun by sick rodents, the town made its stand by hiring the young piper to rid rats from their land. Wearing ragged old clothes, a rat catcher by trade, hypnotized the vermin by the music he played. The rats followed his tunes. Now their city is clean. They drowned in the river, never again to be seen. But citizens refused to pay, having hardened their hearts. They forgot all their promises if the vermin did depart. Now watch a parade of people dancing merrily to and fro, following magic pipe music to the swift river they go. End poem. And I'm sure many people probably, that was by Greg Milhorn, and I have to say I like his rhyming poetry. I think he has a nice flow to it. And I'm sure many people recognize that as being the story of the Pied Piper. What I like when people write to a classic, well-known story is when they tell it in a way that captures your attention, like with good rhyme. And also, it's nice sometimes, even if you know a story, to just kind of, you know, reread it. And the other great thing to me about a poem like this is, you know, for people who are fairly new or haven't really got into the fairy tales, you know, it's a nice introduction. And I have to say, I especially like the first line where it reminds us that death from the Black Plague was breathtakingly real. So this is a story about a myth. It's a fairy tale. But at the same time, it was a fairy tale based on very much a brutal and ugly reality. And so very well done there. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
Well, I think you just about covered it. I completely agree that, you know, it does bring the reality to it of the plague at the beginning, and he does a great job of summarizing the fairy tale, and he nicely lays it out. It's straightforward. I hypnotize the vermin. I think that it's really nicely done, and it tells the classic story with just a little bit of his own twist, and that's the way to do it.
Absolutely, and I like that you brought up the word vermin, because I thought that was a good choice for a word. And Rex, your thoughts?
Yeah, he did tell us, you guys hit it all, except the twist was in that last stanza. Watch a parade of people dancing merrily to and fro, following magic pipe of music to the swift river they go. And since the original, he came back round and took the children so that the town would die out eventually with nothing to sustain it beyond the people that were already in it. And here he does the same thing but takes everybody instead.
Oh, good catch there, Rex. I didn't even, I have to admit, that did not register to me. So, yeah, that was
the idea of taking the children as a bounty was now he had a whole retinue behind him back then he could do with as he chose or mold them to his liking and pass them out into further villages. That's the kind of the moral of refusing to pay that which has been given you. And recompense comes with something really bad happening. That's all the children disappearing.
Ah, okay. I did not know that little tidbit. All right. This will be our last write from that myth and legend. And so this is Helena by Papa Terminus. And Rex, read that for us, please.
Helena by Papa Terminus. As I gaze across the sea, I think of the sweet damsel who is waiting for me. In her flowery frock standing at the dock, her wispy strands of reddish-brown hair, as it gets captured in the breeze, makes all the boys stop and stare. Helen of Troy launched 1,000 ships across the rough tides of the ocean, sweet lady, I have the notion that I'm your slave, taken, no potion. I hear the gulls soaring in the high winds, whispering your name across the waves. My sweet Helena, guide me home, for the sailor no longer wants to roam. I have faced many trails written in tomes, spoke upon the lips of daddies writing poems. In her flowery frock, she waits at the docks for wispy strands of reddish-brown hair. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. And Faziana, your thoughts?
I like the emphasis on her hair because I think that's something that's catching in the painting as well. And the way that it describes it, her wispy strands of reddish brown hair, and then that it gets captured in the breeze. I like the word captured there. Because it's kind of like she's also captured in their stare. There's that male gaze kind of thing where she gets compared to Helen of Troy and, you know, all of the destruction that ends up happening because she's noticed by a man, Paris. And I really like the details of the wind. The wind whispers, and the wind is high with the gulls soaring in it. There's a lot of emphasis on the wind, and that just feels like it works out really nicely in this piece.
Absolutely, I do agree. Excellent comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
I know it's hitting on the sort of Helen of Troy, but it walks a lot deeper than that. Because you can hit this sort of across the span of time where it comes to shipping. It reminds me of Nantucket Sleigh Ride, which is a song about the sailors going out to whaling and the trials and tribulations they go through. And there was the hit on the thought of the sweet woman that sits on the docks waiting. And there's other songs that walk the same way. Always hitting on the lady that waits on shore for them while they're at sea. It's got that the power and allure of the ocean that you always relish that time when you come home to port.
Yeah, you're right. It does have that classic feel of that those tales of you know when the true love waiting. The wife, the girlfriend, waiting at home for the sailor who's been out for months, you know, oftentimes over a year. And I like that, Faziana, you brought up the wind being mentioned several times, and I think that connects really well with the artwork because, you know, obviously, though she's standing still, it looks like her hair is painted to as if it was blowing in the wind. And I like, Rex, that you brought up how while it does mention Helen of Troy, it does expand farther than that. It's a story that it doesn't just limit itself to one time period or to one particular place. And I thought the use of imagery and sound in this was really beautiful. I hear the gulls soaring in the high winds whispering your name across the waves. My sweet Helena, guide me home. Now, those are just some absolutely beautiful things. And very well done. All right. And now we will be moving on to rites inspired by Shakespeare. And up first, we'll do our one SoundCloud that we got for the show as soon as I get the poem up. And this is O Sweet Sea by I Love Poems, otherwise known as Solva. And let's see here, where is that? Here it is.
I love poems. Oh, sweet sea. Oh, mer douce. Standing with her tender demeanor, her faithful and fragile soul, her eyes tired of crying, whisper with a sigh. Oh, sweet sea. My mind searched for him. From one beach to another, from one shore to another, my eye wandered towards the reflection of his shadow, I thought I heard his voice, the gentle wind. Oh, sweet sea, I entrusted him to you at the time of his return. I will thank you graciously. Rock the waves of my darling, you docile waves, free me from my fear one last time, so that my dream soften, come back to me, and my smile dances with the clouds of the sky. Debout avec sa tendre allure, son âme fidèle et fragile, ses yeux fatigués des pleurs, murmure avec soupir, ô mer douce, mon esprit la cherchait, d'une plage à une autre, d'un rivage à un autre, mon œil aérait vers le reflet de son ombre, j'ai cru entendre sa voix avec le vent doux. Ô mer douce, je te l'ai confié à l'heure de mon retour, je te remercierai gracieusement, berce les flots de mon chéri, sur tes vagues dociles, libère-moi de ma peur une dernière fois, pour que mon rêve adouci me revienne et mon sourire danse avec les nuages du ciel. End the poem.
Wonderful reading there, Salwa, and thank you so much for the recording. It is very much appreciated. And just a friendly reminder to people who write for the shows, if you can't call in but you can make a recording with SoundCloud or YouTube, then that is very much appreciated. It's the next best thing, because then we get to hear your poetry and your voice. And Rex, your thoughts.
Boy, that even hit harder on that thought of the that Nantucket sleigh ride. So I had to look something up, and it walks really well. There's a passage in that song that goes, "Fly your willow branches, wrap your body round my soul. Lay down your reeds and drums on my soft sheets. There are years behind us reaching to the place where hearts are beating, and I know you're the last true love I'll ever meet."
Oh, wow, that is beautiful. And that does
and
really fit well.
This walks that very same language with, "Oh, sweet sea, I entrusted him to you. My mind searched him from one beach to another, from one shore to another." There's that longing. "Rock the waves of my darling on your docile waves. Free me from my fear one last time." So there's that longing. "Be calm," "fair weather, calm seas." Fair weather, something like that.
You mean like the red sky at night, sailor's delight? Red sky in the morning?
It's called fair weather following sea, which means safe passage home.
Oh, okay, cool. Excellent comment and observation there. Yeah, this painting of Miranda from The Tempest, I think, was one of the most popular prompts in the contest, and I think she wrote to it beautifully. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
I liked it. I like the way she talks about seeing him in the shadows and thinking that you hear his voice, you know, when you've lost someone, but you're not totally sure that you've lost them. You kind of expect them to show up, and like out of the corner of your eye, there's something and you're like, "Oh, is that him?" No, it's not. When you're waiting for something and hoping so much that it's going to happen, you tend to jump to the conclusion that that's them. So to think that you hear him when it's just the wind or just a shadow on the water, that really shows that longing in very nice detail. I also love the part where she says, I entrusted him to you. And she's like kind of blaming the sea. It's like, I gave him to you, and you better give him back to me. There's this almost scolding of the sea, and it's like, I'll be appreciative. I'll thank you graciously. Give him back. I really like the way she talks to the water.
Oh, absolutely. I thought those were just beautiful and emotive lines. As you said, the kind of the talking to the water, the demanding her love back. The, you know, I entrusted him to you at the time of his return. I will thank you graciously. Was just wonderful lines. I like that. And so that in my dreams soften, come back to me, and my smiles dance with the clouds of the sky. And you can tell this is someone who's in complete heartbreak and will feel only truly healed when they have their love back. So just a wonderful write and excellent comments. And all right, up next we have Like the Cat by Neutron Bomb and Afasiana. Would you give that a read for us, please?
Like the Cat by Neutron Bomb. Her diaphragm rises and falls as she lies on the ground growing. Roots through the porous earth, the damp dirt pools beneath her body, cocooning her in a shallow grave that she dug out with twig fingers. Breathe, keep breathing. Exhaling the brute force of a world at war with itself. Copper-plated bells ring iridescent. Fireflies paint her orbit around the sun. She remains entrenched in soot and tar. Her nine lives bleed into the netherworld. End poem.
Great read, Afasiana. I tell you, when it comes to imagery and metaphors, Neutron always brings it. And Lex, your thoughts?
Well, it kind of hits on the thought of, war itself. Her diaphragm rises and falls, she lies on the ground growing. And you figure that would be Mother Earth, roots through the porous earth, the damp dirt cools beneath her body. Breathe, keep breathing. There's that thought there of don't give up now. World at war with itself. There's the entrenchment of thought between hurricanes and volcanoes and every other little thing. The world is at a war with itself in a way, because of the ever-changing presence of itself, the thoughts of shifting land masses, the crust being chewed up to be regurgitated from the depths of the bottom of the sea to new heights in some arenas, or just to swallow land masses at a mere glance itself. And the thought, she remains entrenched in soot and tar, her nine lives bleed into another world. There's that offering of birth and rebirth, death and rebirth in those moments, no matter what the how she services herself in breadth of herself, she'll always come back with something else that might amaze or channel new thought, new environments.
I like that. I like how you mentioned about the earth being at war with itself, and then the idea of the theme of birth, rebirth, and death, or death and rebirth. Oh, I'm sorry, now I'm getting confused. Which order they go in? But I thought that was well said. And Afasiana, that was read wonderfully. Your thoughts?
I really liked it. It's such good imagery, and there's something really powerful about she dug out of her shallow grave with twig fingers. That's just intense. And the roots going through the earth. The idea of it having the nine lives, like the cat. This is really interesting. It's dark and it's creepy, but it's beautiful at the same time, which Neutron is really good at that. She is a master of making it so dark and eerie and yet absolutely beautiful. I really enjoyed this.
Absolutely, absolutely. Me too. Those are great comments. And I have to agree, you know, the thing that I think also makes this beautiful is that despite it being dark in imagery and then you get the impression, you know, like it's a horrible idea of being buried, but there's this sense of that whole, like, theme of the phoenix rising out of the ashes, of, you know, digging yourself out of the suit and the tar that other people have buried you under. I like cooning her in a shallow grave that she dug out with twig fingers, and also copper-plated bells ring iridescent, fireflies paint her orbit around the sun. There's just something about fireflies painting the orbit around the sun that makes me think of focusing on the small things when it's the larger light that should be focused on, or vice versa, maybe. I don't know. I just think they're wonderfully thought-provoking lines and very well done. And, all right, up next, I was kind of hoping maybe we'd have Mark or Babbler call in, but I know this time of night gets pretty late for Babbler. And actually, I haven't heard from Mark in a while on any shows, so hopefully we'll hear again from him soon. And all right. Up next is Adieu, My Love by Colap. And it goes like this. Floating on river's surface, framed by wild rose bursts, brocaded silk glistening through her liquid crystal case, in the currents her flanks caressed by wet grasses swaying, the arcade of leaning branch of willow weeps as Ophelia sleeps. Vanished from your arms, though you claim your love, through acts such as these, to be cloistered forever under the arches and vaults of stifled prayers, ne'er again shall I feel and smell the open breeze caressing apple-blossoming trees. Though you claim your love for me, what can a woman do but act upon that only thing she has a right to? For after my death, it won't matter if my name and integrity will be smeared, destroyed by any sanctity, for my life, as I have known, would have no meaning to live without your love. So forgive my love, for I know not what I'm doing. The pain, too excruciating, has afforded me only this choice. Perhaps in another world we shall meet, but for now I kiss you, my love, a kiss bittersweet. Adieu, my love. My arms in crystic pose, my palms holding invisible roses, I surrender to thee. Her blue marbled eyes wide open look upwards to the sky. End poem. Oh, that was beautiful. And Defaziana, your thoughts?
I think that's a beautiful poetic adaptation of the painting, really powerful to talk about how her eyes are open looking at the sky. It's a really good way to end it. You know, it manages to make it beautiful despite the fact that it's suicide, which is, you know, a very serious subject, and yet the way that it's described, like with the roses and the brocade silk glistening, and it makes it recognize the beauty of the painting and of perhaps of that moment, but it also calls up like the reasons why banished from your arms, and that it's interesting that she says this was my only choice, and really if there's only one choice, it's not a choice. So that was an interesting way to put it. I thought that it was beautiful in its execution, and really suited the prompt.
Absolutely, absolutely, you're right. It was beautifully executed. So excellent comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
Yeah, the picture is gorgeous. And so that opening stanza itself, brocaded silk glistening through her liquid crystal case. I like that thought because that picture offers up a liquid crystal case. And it hits on the hits on it without actually walking into the thought of suicide through acts such as these, cloistered forever, arches and vaults of stifled prayers. It really digs into that thought of again, walking that realm without touching the thought of suicide itself. Never again shall I feel and smell the open breeze, caress and apple blossoming trees. I like that line. And then again, what can a woman do but act upon that only thing she has a right to? And what else was there? Then there was a thought of, I like the thought with the kiss, bittersweet, sweet, and my arms in cryptic pose. That was a nice touch. Oh, where was that? There was one more thing. Forgive me something. Forgive me for I know not what I do. I saw that there somewhere.
Yes. So forgive my love.
That comes off the cross from Christ. Forgive them, Lord, for they know not what they do. So she'd run the gamut from the thought of suicide, but aligning it up to being crucified, especially with the Christic pose and that thought, forgive me, I know not what I do. Oh, so there you are. So forgive my love, for I know not what I'm doing. The pain too excruciating. So there's the thought of being forgiven in the moment for the suicide with that act of contrition, so to speak.
Yes, exactly. I thought that was a powerful part too. And yeah, this whole thing was beautiful, but yeah, some of those lines that you called out, I really liked where it mentioned the never again shall I feel and smell the open breeze, caressing apple blossoming trees. That was wonderful use of imagery and a sense of finality. I like how Faziana brought up the line about how there was only one choice. And I think to me what I liked about that line was the fact that it emphasized how broken the mind of this person, this character was. Because if you've gotten to that point where you don't think there's any other choice, you know, then and you're thinking it's then therefore a choice that's, Now, what I connected this with, besides the story of Ophelia, and it was adapted, that this was, like, beautifully written, was the suicide letter of what's her name? Virginia Woolf, where she wrote the letter to her husband, and it was very much in the same tone as this poem, the whole idea of, you know, forgive me, my love, I can't go on, things are too excruciating. So I thought that was really, really a nice touch there, in the idea of, you know, just how any person put into this situation can feel as if they're betraying the one person who has meant the most to them. So just absolutely a beautiful right there, Colette. And thank you for sharing it with us. And all right. Up next is Eternally Thine by Sir La Tour. And Rex, give that a read for us, please.
Eternally Thine by Sir La Tour. Oh, he's even got a coin for himself. Oh, how I just fear thy last breath fade, for under God's light did thy memory fade. I made, in it, you'll do that again. Oh, how I just fear thy last breath fade, for under God's light did thy memory made, of springs long past and summers gone, to bring light to mine heart with joyous song. Cool winds, gentle breeze, doth make me forget long hours past dawn from whence I swept, For in them I ever think of thee, with dreams of holding you pressed to me. And now as I rush to be by thy side, my mind races wildly for the words deep inside to tell thee of my heart and my love for you, and hopes that we may forever be just two. Whilst my gaze lies gently upon thine eyes, with hope this treasure lays on distant sky, deep in the wish this promise be true, that our love be forever eternally through. End poem.
That was a wonderful read, Rex. I think that poem was perfect for your voice. And I know Sir Latour, or I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right, but first of all, I really like his gold coin. And it's nice to see a new, I should say, I don't know him, but I like seeing new people in our contest. So I thought that was really cool. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
I really like the rhythm of it and the rhyme and the old-fashioned language. I thought it was fitting for a Shakespearean contest. It had really nice form.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have to agree. And Rex, your thoughts?
It hit on the note of loss and tragedy, especially stopped out that way. How I just feared our last breath stayed. For under God's light did thy memory made. And then kind of hits it into those noted thoughts of springs, the summers, light to his heart. And it's kind of almost a eulogy in the moment, standing over the grave and bidding love forever, even though she's gone.
Absolutely. Yeah, it does have that feel to it. It kind of makes me think of the Annabelle Lee by Edgar Allan Poe. I mean, obviously not in like form, but you know, in the general idea of that pine for that lost love that's gone to the grave. Yeah, wonderful imagery in this. Great use of classic language. And I really like that second and third stanza with cool wind, gentle breeze doth make me forget. That whole idea of just wanting to be in that place and time that makes you forget. And my mind races wildly for the words deep inside. You know, sometimes words about love and loss and, you know, are the most difficult ones to come up with. So. Excellent write and very well done. And, all right. Well, I just have to say how much I appreciate both of you being here. And up next is Birth of an Empire by Damn It Dave. And Afasiana, will you give that a read for us, please?
Birth of an Empire by Damn It Dave. A friend betrayed, the dead was gone. His body lay beneath the sun. Above him all the Senate stood, and Brutus' hands were drenched in blood. A tyrant gone, a country free, the Senate now would hold the key. The public's ire would quickly soar, resulting in a civil war. The Ides of March had played its schemes, and it would haunt poor Brutus's dreams. He'd toss and turn the whole night through. He'd not forget the words, "Etu." Great Caesar, ghost, laughed at his pain. He knew Augustus soon would reign. Republic doomed by public scorn. The Roman Empire thus was born. End poem.
Great be there, Afasiana. And that rite was actually inspired by the painting by William Blake of Julius Caesar and Brutus. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, a nice walk to historical note through Shakespeare's thought. I like the picture, the Caesar's ghost by Blake. I also like that last stanza, great Caesar's ghost laughed at his pain. Now, there's an inside joke there. You look at go back to the late 50s and the early 60s, the old Superman with George Reeves. Perry White was known for saying, great Caesar's ghost when he got a little teased on the show.
Oh, that's a nice little tidbit of information to know. Yeah. Cool, cool. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
I got a little distracted. I didn't know William Blake was a painter as well. I only knew his poetry, so I was, oh, wow.
Yes,
you need to check out the Great Red Dragon.
I will look it up. But in terms of the poem, I thought that it was nicely done. It recognizes the key points of the story and Brutus's feelings of kind of guilt and confusion, the haunting of his dreams, and the way that the words stuck with him. And Caesar's ghost laughing, knowing what's going to happen. I think that all the key points of the story were included here, and the rhyming is smooth throughout. So this is well done.
Absolutely, absolutely. You both made really great comments there, mentioning how it really worked well with the historical notes and the attention to detail. And I do like, well, this is great all the way through. I do like that second stanza, the tyrant gone, a country free. And then the itis of March had played its schemes. I like that he worked that in, you know, the day that, Caesar was killed. And so I thought that was really nice attention to detail. And, excellent historical write, and very well done. All right. So, now, I will let you know that we actually have, only have 7 writes left. So, Rex, if you have something that you think would fit the show, Afasiana, same for you. Then go ahead and grab them, or if you'd like to just simply put up a favorite Shakespeare poem, that's fine too. All right, and go ahead and grab the next poem. I see Babbler hanging on the board. Good to see her. And she is in time to peek in, because we are going to go ahead and put her poem up next. And this is Miranda's Spell by Babbler, and it goes like this. The vast swath oft called blue, but up close green, rages against a starboard bow. The ants dangling from rigging toss to and fro against the mystic maelstrom, bring good omens now. Isles, population, amasses, with sleep-logged sailors swept ashore to lay to rest in age row. Young princes glimpse through directed by sea nymph's artful spell, lifts a grieving brow. A goddess of kindness, of mild temper and even keel, long strands flowing in an auburn windswept cloud. Two hearts stolen in a moment conjured all the joy and the fury of life's passion avowed. End poem. And Rex.
I like the language in this. Look at that first stanza. The vast swath oft called blue, but up close green, rages against the starboard bow. And the mystic maelstrom, sleep-logged sailors, sea nymphs artful spell. That there's a nice even flow of thought and depth in this, mild temper and even keel. It all hits on the thought of the ocean itself, but also the ship as well. And the thought, that third stanza down, Isles population amassed with sleep-logged sailors swept ashore to lay to rest an aged row. There's that thought of the sea, offering up the dead so that they may be buried properly rather than be food for the creatures of the deep, so to speak. And then she hits on that little goddess of kindness, of mild temper and even keel. I like that thought. Long strands flowing in an auburn windswept cloud. There's a nice, that's a well-painted scene there with her thoughts. And two hearts stolen in a moment conjured all the joy and the fury of life's passion avowed. There's kind of a thought of coming home finally, one way or the other.
Yeah, that's a good observation there. I like that. And Faziana, your thoughts?
I liked it. I especially like the third stanza. Isles, population and masses with sleep-logged sailors swept ashore to lay to rest an aged row. That's the island's population amasses, because I believe in the story there's only two people who live on the island originally, and then all of a sudden they're like, the population has boomed, but everyone is kind of like swept ashore sailors who were not prepared to be there in the state that they're in. And it's laying to rest an aged row. Row as in fight, I think, like the argument, because they're there for revenge. I think it's been a while since I've read it. I think that they're on a revenge mission, and so that it's laying to rest that old grudge. And yet they are also rowing, so the row works on multiple levels. Conjured in the last stanza is a really good word choice, because there's also kind of like spells and magic within the story. So two hearts stolen in a moment conjured, and it's not necessarily like in the magical sense, but I think that conjured can work on multiple levels as well. There's some really good word choices here.
Absolutely. Yeah, beautiful word choices. I like how this isn't an extremely long poem, but yet it has an epic feel to it. And a lot of that is because of, I think, the word choices of things that could work, as you said, on multiple levels. I like the Anne Stangling from rigging tossed to and fro. It's, to me, that whole idea of when compared to the power of the gods, we are nothing more than ants. You know, we're just pretty much useless in comparison. I like the emotiveness of two hearts stolen in a moment. And I like how she really just captured the essence of the tale with wonderful imagery. Isles, population of masses with sleep-logged sailors. So just absolutely an excellent write and very well done. And all right, let's see what we have next. And all right, up next is Cordelia by Robert J. Teese. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Cordelia by Robert J. Teese. No gambit guides your tenderness. Embellishments don't frame your heart. While others form their faithfulness, love pure as yours makes artless art. No acts rehearsed on painted stages, played to gain the crown's acclaims. No exaltations plucked from pages, speak you soul through strangers' names. All answers authenticity, or crumples like a fallen king. This much you teach us royally, no matter how a truth will sting, or where deceivers ostracize, no kingdom shall survive by lies. And poem.
Wonderful read, Rex. And Faziana, your thoughts?
I thought this was great. Sorry, I accidentally clicked back and I lost the page. Just one second, I want to be able to quote it. Here we go. I really like it. No gambit guides your tenderness is is a really nice opening line. And the way that it starts with no at the beginning of the first three stanzas, it's an interesting way of framing it. And all answers, authenticity of crumples like a falling king. Like there's this demand for truth and transparency. And if you don't have that, then it just falls away and it's meaningless. And I really love that no kingdom shall survive by lies. There's this call for honesty that I really appreciate in this.
Absolutely. And I really like how you said a call for truth and transparency. That was very well said. And Rex, your thoughts?
I do like that opening stanza. No gamble, no gambit, guide your tenderness. You don't need the thought of that extra, just that frames your heart. And while others sworn their faithfulness, love pure as yours makes artless art. That is a nice tone in that artless art. And hits on the thought of that which walks within unfaithfulness to the truth ends up as he crumples like a fallen king. It never stands the test of time when it's buried under the light of truth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is well said there. It's beautifully written. It's got that sense of, as it says, all answers authenticity for crumbles like a fallen king. The whole idea that, the truth has to be able to, it has to stand up in order to be the truth. I like the idea that, as it's in the end line, no kingdom shall survive by lies. It might at first, but it's not going to last. And that great stanzas all the way through, but yeah, that was particularly really wonderful alliteration. The words, the language within that first stanza, it's powerful and beautiful at the same time. So great comments and excellent write. All right. And next is Guiltless by Blue Harrison. And Aphasiana, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Suffer me, as twin to tune I wrote, each undeserving of note on high, sweetest song, garnered white, heaven's breath. But yet, each floats breaths, assuming a gathered throng, one that dons the sunset's might, and wears it without boasting. Lay me gentle to bed, a king what would throttle in climbing softest pillow. Pile all beneath my head, for I love and readily lose all I am, all the wounds ever nursed, in the name of Father, who claims my star amidst this universe. And poem.
Wonderful read there. And Rex, your thoughts?
This walks the thought as a Shakespeare note. Suffer me, one that dons the sunset, lay me gentle to bed, throttle, all I am, in the name of Father, he who claims my star amidst this universe. There's that giving in the moment, no matter what. Or because of what, maybe. Resigning oneself in the moment.
Yeah, almost a sense of giving, and whether it's giving because you want to, or giving because you've just come to accept what is. That's an interesting thought there. I like the comment. And Aphasiana, your thoughts?
I liked it. I like each float's breaths assuming a gathered throng. Something about the floating breaths there captured me. A king, what would throttle in climbing, softest pillow, is quite the statement there. My star amidst this universe, he who claims my star amidst this universe, is a beautiful line, too.
It is. It is. There's some absolutely wonderful comments. I have to say, yeah, there's some powerful language in here. Suffer me as twined tune I wrote each undeserving of notes on high, sweetest song garnered at white heaven's breath. Now, there's a sense of someone who's given themselves to a spiritual cause or to a higher cause, like, you know, whether it's for their kingdom and whether the higher cause actually exists or it's in their mind, I'm not really sure. But I thought throttle was definitely the word choice that was powerful. It was very against the imagery of a softest pillow. It stood out as starkly violent. He who claims my star amidst the universe, just really that whole idea to me of somebody laying claim to maybe what should be yours only, or maybe it's choosing you out of everybody else. I really enjoy blues writing because I think it's wonderfully layered and very well done. All right. Oh, good. Rex did find something. I was going to say, have any of you had time to run and get something?
Well, I just finished that today for Rob.
Oh, nice, nice. Oh, I'm glad you did write for his contest. All right. Well, then we will continue forward. And, that's a long poem. And Aphasiana, you don't have to, but with this next poem, I'll be doing the reading, and I can have Rex and I comment first if that would give you a little extra time to put something on the board, because we are going pretty fast.
We do have the one in the contest. It looks like I did finish that.
Okay. I read it, and I was like, wow, that really looks finished. But I wasn't going to question you.
I just forgot about it, so yeah, I will accept that one being read.
Okay, cool. Well, when it's your next turn around, we'll make sure to have you read that one. All right,
okay.
And up next is Othello's Theory by Mark Lupe, and it goes like this. Superficially, I did well, but I was never comfortable. The problem was I was too smart. The other problem, I was dark. I went to school in a place of ridicule which left the deepest scars. I won all the wars, lost all the battles until I was ready to believe the lie. Unfocusedly, I took a life. I pushed down on my wife, killed whatever might be there, killed my insecurity, killed my pain and killed my fear that was always, always there. Killed her. Why? It left me room to die. End poem. Oh, wow, that was just really compelling. And Aphasiana, your thoughts?
That was very compelling. I was like, is this real? But no, it's a fellow. I'm like, wow, he just confessed.
Such a time.
It was a convincing poem. I had myself questioning, how well do we know Mark?
Right.
Yeah, it was that intense. You know, that especially, like, it talked about, like, having the deep scars of, like, you know, being ridiculed and all of that, and then that anger gets taken out on someone else, someone who he loved. You know, that's a story that happens throughout history. Now that I look at the AN and realize that it's about Othello, I think this fits the play very nicely.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said. Excellent comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
I like the thought in Othello's theory, just in the title itself, as he hits on, superficially, I did well, but I was never comfortable. Then he goes on to explain himself. I was too smart. I was dark. And there's a note in understanding the thought of being too smart, but also dark within that smartness. And the next one, I like that thought, the place of ridicule left deep scars. I won all the wars, lost all the battles, until I was ready to believe the lie. And it hits on that notation of the yes men, so to speak. They will pump you up until you believe the lies told, because, hey, it never really happened. Unfortunately, I took a life. I pushed down on my wife. And the thought with he's used killed quite a bit in here, but it fits. Without it, it doesn't really hold as much depth as it does with killed whatever might be there. Killed my insecurity, killed my pain, killed my fear. That was always, always there. Killed her, killed her, killed her. Why? It left me room to die. It has that notation of thought to being a soliloquy, an invitation to explanation.
Oh, I like that observation of it having being a soliloquy and an invitation to observation. Oh, very cool. And yeah, I have to say that this definitely fit really well with the prompt of Othello. It had that really, that dark intensity about it that I really appreciated. And again, another rite that has an epic feel to it, but with only a few lines. And a wonderful choice of the first-person narrative of somebody who has fallen completely into the realm of madness. So very, very well done. And let's see, so that went. Does it? Now I'm starting to lose track of, okay, so I just read, before me was Aphasiana, now it's going to be Rex's turn to read something, and who do we have coming up next? All right. And get that copied back into Late Night Poets. And all right, up next is Lady Laudanum by Thomas Black. And Rex, go ahead, please.
Lady Laudanum by Thomas Black. I knew her well, Ophelia, she who is my opium, the tincture of poppies, the smell of hyacinth and violets, a rose among the able thorns, the water lily of Moses, that the buoyant angel above could not have made more beautiful. The path to ruin is always love. It is always in these feelings that we are caught and drowned for the reason the heart must be kept inside a tight citadel. Her pale complexion spreads from head to toe, like you, and her eyes fixed is wide open, knowing both good and evil. Between her breasts, the milk of fragrant chamomile, her skin following the flow, the blue outs around her waist spread out beyond the river of opinion that surround her to become a blissful dream. Have you seen embers burn in a river? The molten fibers of her hair, red hair fan out among the resilient reed that form the basket holding her face to heaven, peering from under that canopy of the possum kingdom, contemplating our astronomy. I don't know where angels lay their head at night, that I know enough to guess that their spirits bed down, not among the star moon, but in the water near her skirt, where each thread connected to the universe holds their gaze that is true astronomy. And now that I think of it, not that it matters till this very moment, I've never loved water more than when I entered to gather her from Leviathan, that beauty sleepy and demure, she who the river gentle held for me in safekeeping, she who is my citadel no more. And so walking upstream, taking her from among the water fronds, I moved to a place beside my dear Horatio's home in the green Elysian fields above the Stygian floodplain, where I will keep her. End quote.
Wonderful read there, Rex. And I have to say, that is absolutely a beautiful write. And Aphasiana, your thoughts?
I really liked the part where it says, beyond the river of opinion that surround her to become blissful dream. So, like, not an actual river, but, like, there are opinions and rumors and things that people think about her, or maybe are trying to make her think. And she, in her beauty, sees beyond that, and she is beyond those things. So if you can see past what everyone else says about her, you can see how amazing she is. I thought that was a really important line.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. Excellent comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
Oh, I like the thought with Lady Laudanum. It's a nice note. And then again, that opening, I knew her well, Ophelia. There is another note there. Alas, pure Uric, I knew him well. She who was my opium. Then again, digging into the laudanum angle, the tincture of poppies, the smell of hyacinth and violets, arose among the able thorns, the water lily of Moses, that the buoyant angel above could not have made more beautiful. That is an outstanding opening thought to Ophelia. In death. And then the path to ruin is always love. It is always in these feelings that we are caught and drowned. For that reason, the heart must be kept inside a tight citadel. Again, a nice tight phrasing. I like the citadel thought for the heart. And then again, it's another bit of beauty. Between her breasts, the milk of fragrant chamomile, her skin following the flow, the blue Alps around her waist spread out beyond the river of opinion that surround her to become a blissful dream. This is quite lovely.
It really is. It really is. An excellent comment there. Now, laudanum, that is a type of a drug or an herb or something that makes you sleep, right?
Yeah, it's used for pain. It's used to help with sleep, but in larger doses, it will kill you.
Yep. Well, that's like most medications. Yeah, it seems like, you know, the benefits
come with... Yeah, but this was taken as a liquid tincture, something you could drop into your tea or into your alcohol or drip over your green liquid that you can hallucinate on.
Oh, yes, the absinthe.
Absinthe, yeah.
Yeah, never quite pronounce that word right. Like, I know I'm saying the right word, but it just comes out a little too lispy when I try to say it. I thought this
just
was...
Just think of it as absinthe makes the heart grow fonder or grow colder.
There you go. But, yeah, oh, my goodness, wonderful use of imagery and language. This beautiful and powerful and the sense of almost like sense of a being addicted to somebody. Just very well done. I have to agree with Babbler. It was very rich and beautiful in senses and tingling language, textured and intoxicating. Those are good phrases for it. Very well said there. All right. All right, your poem is is up next to Faziana, so go ahead, give it a read for us.
Windswept Witness by Faziana. Exiles crags barren of connection, the wind wailing whips auburn waves, the sea of silk swishes about her slender form, watching hopes of human interaction sink, escapes deck split in a three-card spread, the fool, the ten of swords, and the tower, safe passage submerged in subterfuge. End poem.
Great read of Faziana. And I have to say, if I had written a line like safe passage submerged in subterfuge, I would have tripped too. Like, I almost just tripped trying to prove I wasn't tripped. But I'm glad this has ended. I'm glad this ended up being a finished poem, but you know what it is? It's that whole National Poetry Month thing. I mean, I don't know about you, but I was complete shocked that I've actually written like 22 poems in the last 23 days. And so, yeah.
Me too, but I don't even remember them anymore because they just kind of spit them out.
Right? You just spit them out. They start blending in one after the other. So. But, yeah, this is an excellent write. And, Rex, your thoughts?
I like that opening line, exiles, crags, barren of connection. It offers up the thought with the picture itself and where you're going to go from there. And you didn't disappoint, but the wind wailing whips auburn waves, the sea of silk swishes about her slender form, watching hopes of human interaction sink. Now, that all walks well into the picture. And then you turn it. But you didn't turn it totally because you offer up the deck. But you turn that little bit of scene into the three-card spread of tarot, the fool, the ten of swords, and the tower. Safe patch is submerged in subterfuge. All right. Now everything walks there. You've got the image of this woman waiting for that ship to come home with whomever is on board that she's waiting for. All of a sudden, the one who read her tarot cards in the moment told her this would happen, so to speak, and she's there watching it unfold before her very eyes.
Absolutely. Boy, Faziana, I don't know what kind of comment I'm going to make after that because I think Rex pretty much just dined upon the whole thing. So, but I will have to say that this is a nutritionally dense snack-sized poem. Like, you only have a few lines, and yet you capture so much of the imagery and the emotion. I do like that opening line where, the whole idea of you talk about the shoreline and the way it looks, and yet it's the shoreline that connects to the sea and connects her thoughts to where her lover is. And watching hopes of human interaction sink. And that works well on the level of being about the picture, the artwork itself, but it also works on the level of how nowadays, with social media, the hopes of human interaction very much has, started to lose all hope. So just an excellent write here and very well done.
Thank you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I will be reading the next poem, but hold on just a minute because my dog is behind me about to start barking, and I would rather let her out now and know that she doesn't start barking in the middle of me reading the poem. So there we go. That is taken care of, and now we don't have to worry about that too much. All right. And this is Jive Man by Thomas B., and it goes like this. Now you take Willie laying down the sound. He knew what was shaking, what was rocking all around town. It takes an artist, not a king, to recognize where the truth hides, no matter how loud the liars sing. Nations tremble as artists assemble to sing the songs woven in their souls. They deny, they defy, rules and laws that stand in the way when they have a life to betray, when they want you to listen, open your mind to all they have to say. Willie the Sheikh knew the rules, kings and power are always great until events betray them in the final hour. The sly Iago with the poison knife, the fateful blot on Macbeth's wife. We love the circus, the sword swallower's feast. We know the show and watch with disbelief. But come the play when truth will out, we watch in silent awe as it slays all doubt. We leave a little wiser than what's before, perhaps assured that we knew the score. So point your fingers and take your stand, tell everyone you know how much you understand. But in the end, everyone goes to see the show when Willie the Sheikh lets you be in the know. End poem. I really enjoyed that one. I thought it was so clever. And that really kind of goes with what you were talking about in the beginning of the show, Lex. So let's hear your thoughts.
Well, I think old Will might get a kick out of this, bringing it as a modern aperitif to him. Now you take Willie laying down the sound. He knew what was shaking, what was rocking all around town. It takes an artist, not a king, to recognize where the truth hides, no matter how loud the liars sing. So he's already walking that tale of truth within the sarcasm and the little jabs and dings that he threw. Willie the Sheikh knew the rules. Kings of power always great until events betray them in the final hour. The sly Iago with the poison knife, that fateful blot on Macbeth's wife. Nice touches there. Circus, sword swallowers. It all paints out the thought with the globe was the place to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. Well said there. And DeFaviana, your thoughts?
I really enjoyed it. I like that he points out that, like, people kind of use knowing Shakespeare as, like, it's like a snobbery thing of, like, you can quote it and things like that. So it's like, but you already know how it ends, but you go to the play so you can be like, yeah, that I knew that was going to happen. Like, it's like Willie Shakes lets you be in the know. So it's something that it's repeated so much that you can be like the one who predicts the ending, but of course you know the ending because, you know, it's a classic. I thought that was clever the way he's kind of like playing on our use of Shakespeare knowledge to get ahead in some ways. And I had an English teacher whose cat's name was Willie Shakes. So this poem just reminded me of that cat.
Boy, that kind of offers up the thought of, oh, what is Willie Shakes? What does Willie shake?
Yeah, he was a little bit
of a curvy teacher, too. That wouldn't surprise me if
that
was a reference.
Funny. That is funny. And, I thought those were excellent comments. And this was so clever, how it was a wonderful modern-day tribute, how it talks about, you know, the knowledge of the plays, and as Faziana mentioned, you know, having that kind of snobbishness. But also, it seems like, in general, like people think they're in the know about, you know, life and, you know, society in general. But oftentimes it takes an artist pointing certain things out to really inform people. And so just a wonderful, clever write and very well done. And I see he has an entire list titled Jive. I'm going to have to check out some of the writes on that list, see what he's created there. Oh, very cool. All right, and up next is let's see, we had Adriana, Rex. Okay, now it's up next is Catching the Sound by Iona Cosma, and it goes like this. I left my keys on the timorous ground together with my dreams. They jangled anxiously in their timid expectations of a kiss. Stay there, you shouted, loud enough to make my white shirt shiver, my body feel your might. So you left. I stayed stranded for God knows how long on the Carillion Sea, headphones in my ears, drowning. I pose no opposition, for waves are soft and mild. They always take you somewhere better than mine nowhere. The dissolution of love is like wax that melts on a bronze candlestick. It leaves behind deformed traces that no one can restore. It is an overexposed color photograph that dilutes like the salt of the earth to give the taste of drowning. I think I heard you hatching a sound from a boy's toy box, but it mostly feels like dreaming, like looking through a transparent glass and not seeing anything, the horizon of opacity, the dismal diminution of indigo from aging ink. End poem. Oh, I have to say, I really like that one. That is just some really just intriguing imagery and thoughts. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
Well, I was just listening, not watching, because my glasses fell apart again, so I couldn't see.
Oh, I didn't know that happened.
But I really need to get them fixed. I really liked the way that it sounded. It sounded like it flowed very nicely, and there was something about, like, I pose no opposition. I liked that part. I'm sorry, I couldn't read along, so I missed parts of it.
Well, if you're anywhere near as half-blind as I am, I completely understand. I am completely worthless without my glasses as far as vision goes. So, but excellent comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
She brought this forth, that opening stanza. That's quite a bit. I left my keys on the timorous ground together with my dreams. They jangled anxiously in their timid expectation of a kiss. Stay there, you shouted, loud enough to make my white shirt shiver, my body feel your might. There's a nice note. They're expecting something to unfold in the moment. And then she walks in a different direction. So you left. I stay stranded for God knows how long on the Carillion Sea, headphones in my ears, drowning. Dissolution of love is like wax that melts in a bronze candlestick. It leaves behind deformed trace that no one can restore. The overexposed color photograph, the dissolution of salt of the earth gives taste to drowning. Again, that the thought of drowning. And then she finishes out with a kind of a rethought to the opening. I think I heard you hatching the sound from a boy's toy box. But then again, that kind of walks the distance, too, because you got transparent glass, opacity, and the dismal diminution of indigo from aging ink. So there's that sort of, God damn, he cut and run when I was waiting. What happened?
Right? Yeah, I have to agree there. That was an excellent comment. There really is a sense of betrayal, of, as you mentioned, Rex, that kind of that cut and run. And that waiting around for somebody who's not going to return, just a really emotive use of language and imagery. So you left, I say, stranded for God knows how long on the Carillion Sea, headphones in my ears, drowning. And I like how amongst the kind of classic imagery like the sea, she has the headphone, the idea of just constantly you drowning yourself in music in order to forget. I thought it was a very just strong and biting line. I think I heard you hatching a sound from a boy's toy box, but it mostly feels like dreaming, like looking through a transparent glass. You know, I just, wow, that, I don't know, these are lines that just really hit hard on the whole idea of, you know, losing not only love, but losing hope. So excellent, right? And very well done. I have to say, I really like Iona Cosma's poetry, and I'm glad to see her writing more for her contests. And all right. And I'm going to switch things up a little bit. So I'm going to have Faziana read the next one, which is Miranda by Joy Broom. Well, do you have your glasses back on, I should ask?
They're sort of half on, but I think I can manage.
Okay.
Miranda by Joy Broom. Lady waits by the water with care in hope that her love will soon be there. Come to me, lover, aid my despair. Dressed in the gown any lad would love to see, I with purpose expected he. Love will come to me. Lady who waits will always wait, for he that shall come. Forgotten beauty and forgotten mine eyes, waves crash as she calls out to he. He is not coming, but in the midst she cries. Her lover is not here, nor reason, nor rhyme. Did he meet another lass? Did the sea take him hostage once again? Waves do not crash until my lover comes. Miranda waits, but still no one. End poem.
That was a wonderful read. Thank you. And Rex, your thoughts?
I still walk goes to that sort of the long wait on the shore. But it hits on a couple of distinct thoughts. There is no pandering to the thought of loss and death. It walks a different sound down near the end. Did he meet another lass? Did the sea take him hostage once again? And it means an even longer trip. Waves do not crash until my lover comes. Miranda waits, but still no one. So there's that thought of the irreverent waiting, but still she's pining because the sea is that greatest lover that most women fear back in the day. And there's still that thought of another woman that still glanced across her mind.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said there. Yeah, I did like the sense of the questions in here, the sense of wondering what has happened and why. And I really like, I with purpose expected he, love will come to me. Lady who waits will always wait. Such a sense of finality. And Faziana, your thoughts?
I really enjoyed it. I think that the different possibilities, wondering why isn't he coming, is a good thing for her to be contemplating, because that was the thing, like, you know, waiting for someone to come home and you don't know. It made me think of Penelope and Odysseus, where, you know, he took years and years to get home. And she still, like, fought off the suitors and all that because she had faith that he would come home. And it was just, like, I can't imagine waiting 10 years thinking, oh, hey, he'll be fine.
Right?
Now
that's devotion.
Something was happening. as difficult as travel was back then, still, he either was off having affairs, which he was, or he was trapped in danger, which he was. But that's all I could think about was the Odyssey as I read this. And I thought that she did it very nicely. Again, I can't quite see properly, so I'm happy I managed to read it, but I think I'm going to have to go and try to fix my glasses. So thank you so much, guys. It was a great show.
Well, thank you. Always a pleasure. Good to have you. Take care, Faisy.
Good night.
All right, Faisy.
All right. Well, Rex, your turn to read your poem.
All the world's a rookery. Bury me in a rookery's bent parable, where eyes wide shut are writhing, sweating abattoirs of stained and straining cave bestia, seeking penance in spent pence. Plead me that music of rotted soul, need in dark vestment sanctimony, penny for your thoughts, a pound for the tithing swallowed, licked lips, salting body and blood refugees. We be cannibal mantics for pleasure and pain, purifying those ginger spirits, defleshing our minds' degenerate confessions, engaging once more in disposable debauchery, painting solace in the wind of a pewed fart, never uttered in Vatican stilettos availability at 13 past that spring of plumescent rouge. And red rum always warped, molding sinews buggery, coffers for coffins, silver shekels for Charon in Auschwitz, where angel death shuffled papal passports dancing a tango to Patagonia, had theology raftering with its own inebriants of his will, be damned in the contraband of flesh set upon the tables of one's plausible denials, eating heartily from gold plates and goblets filled with wine pulled from the teeth of those burnt for the stake you employ. All the world's a rookery, but God damn it, Dante, you wrote with eyes wide open. Still, they were shut to compos mentis. End poem.
Oh, my goodness, Rex. Wow, I tell you, you are just always impressive. As you know, this is. I'm glad you wrote for this contest. Did you have a specific prompt that inspired you, or was it just pretty much kind of getting the flavor of all of them? Did you get a chance to watch the
videos?
Well,
there were a couple of pictures with, what the hell was it? With some words attached. And there was one picture of it. It looked like a huge mass of bodies in the painting.
Yes, yeah. Like his artwork was like that. Like he did these carvings where everything, like the bodies kind of all blended together. Yeah, so very cool. I have to say now rookeries, that's a type of slum, right? Like like an area of town or slum-like?
It ended up being a slum. A rookery was where you kept the birds back in the day.
Okay.
Your crows, I mean, a rookery. But it turned out into the slums, and in the slums, the rookeries were known as the cat houses, the whorehouses, the dirty, nasty playpens.
Oh, very cool. Well, I have to say, you have just beautiful and powerful use of language, and I like how in here there really is that sense of seeking, like, forgiveness, seeking a confirmation that there's something better. And when you you mentioned, you talk about the rookery, you talk about the vestments, the refugees, and you mentioned, was it Auschwitz you mentioned? Yeah, Sharon Auschwitz. This very much reminds me of this, there's this lady who was famous for sneaking children out of, like, this slum place, like in Nazi Germany, like in her backpack. And it just, you know, I don't know, like there's something so brutally ugly about this, and yet there's something, the idea, to me anyways, clinging to the hope of finding your way out of damnation. I really like theology raftering within its imbriance of his will, the damned and the contraband of flesh set upon the tables of one's plausible denials. You know, there's such a note to hypocrisy for me. Just a powerful layered right and very well done. And is there anything that you wanted to add?
I Babla got quite a bit. Debauchery, money, church, madness. It is a look at the thought. The let's see, Auschwitz was a definite thought. The silver, the coffers for coffins. I mean, they'd rather take the money in than give up for the coffin. Silver shekels for Charon at Auschwitz, and then the angel where angel death shuffled papal passports, dancing a tango to Patagonia. There's that thought right there of Joseph Mengele getting a free pass to Venezuela through the Vatican. And I like the thought with Dante as a note. He worked heartily in proposing all he did for the church in the nine levels of hell. but his eyes were clearly not attuned to what was actually going on.
Cool. Well, excellent right there. All right. And all right, well, I'll go ahead and read my poem, which obviously you're the only one here to comment on that. And this is not on topic, but I feel like it kind of fits. It was written to a line from a song, The Sun Sets for You. And this is confetti in a galaxy of sidewalks and flesh. And it goes like this. The sun hangs from the sky like a whodunit crime of passion, dark matter gravitating towards the pole of stitched flesh. Flowers grow in gardens of time, lost swigs of morality tapering themselves against the songbird's throat. Remember when you wrote poetry and the laughter that oozed from your lemongrass lips. You brushed tears away like an expose of cover-ups. Serpentine shadows coiled themselves in the galaxy of your mind. We rarely like the answers, so we change the questions. We rarely like the questions, so we bite our own tongues of peppercorn and pickled herring. Love is the last craved breath of Houdini entertaining the masses. You made yourself confetti, torn pieces of newspaper headlines raining into sidewalk cracks. We all want to feel as if our brilliance will touch the corroded edges of red brick mansions. We all hope lucid wisteria will crawl upon the ghosts of our footprints. Too often, in the end, we settle for Hallmark card salutations and mumblings of what if, dipped in the cardboard chorus of holy wine, spilling into a crown of pufferfish. End poem.
Nicely read.
Wow, thank you.
I don't think this is the nicest side of Bukowski. You might actually like this.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment.
Lost swigs of morality. Remember when you wrote poetry and laughter that oozed me lemongrass lips? You could like enjoy that. And this is typical. We rarely like the answers, so we change the questions. We rarely like the questions. So we bite our own tongues of peppercorn and pickled herring. Well, he probably had a lot of those. And that thought with love is Houdini entertaining the masses. You made yourself confetti, torn a piece of newspaper headlines raining in sidewalk cracks. This all walks that edge of Bukowski having a Hallmark moment. Although this would be the easier side of him, though he never showed it.
Yeah, I guess it was kind of just about, you know, loss and feeling, you know, worthless. The lead singer of the group committed suicide. So I don't know what particularly the song was about, but it had a really sad note to it. So I was just kind of trying to capture that idea of coming to the end of life and feeling like you hadn't accomplished anything. But yeah, it does have kind of that little bit of Bukowski language in a more slightly elegant way. But thank you for the comment. Well, I have to say, Rex, I have enjoyed this show. I'm very thankful to Aphasiana for calling in and hanging out the whole time, especially since she had done her show like just before this one. Thankful to you for being, as always, an awesome co-host and being here. To Babbler for hanging out on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, who is calling in, who is listening now or will be listening later. You are always appreciated. And Rex, you've got a show coming up on Sunday and a show coming up on Tuesday. You want to mention something about those?
Sunday.
Surrealism.
Music. With the Beatles, I Am the Walrus.
Oh, very cool. I'm glad it's a part two show because now I have a chance to write for it.
I forgot what Tuesday. Oh, Tuesday, quotes by Clive Barker.
Another good choice.
Yes, it leads off with to call you excrement would be to...
insult to the products of my bowels.
Yes. Well, yeah. I thought that was a nice quite an open thought.
That is. There is many, many people I wouldn't mind saying that to. So definitely great choice there.
Shit, but hell, I'm not going to insult my shit with yours, so guitar.
Exactly. And really, you can't insult anyone much better than that. You've got quite a few quotes in there. I really think that going, even though he's known for the horror genre and has some excellent dark movies and books, that going with him for an After Midnight show with those quotes was a really good idea. So kudos on that. And I don't know what I'm going to do. I might actually get some sleep, so we'll see. All right, well, have a good night.
Good night, gang.